Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
Hello, friends. Welcome back to the show. My guest today is Dr. Aaron Ninestein. He's the chief medical officer at Notable, which on their website says they're the leading automation platform for patient engagement and staff workflows. All right, that's jargon, but this guy's pretty cool. First of all, he got his medical degree on a ski slope. True story. He'll tell you about it at Big Sky Clinic in Montana. He's a closet anthropologist. He's a really funny guy. He gives great talks, but he's a triple board certified endocrinologist, like triple, not good enough. I wanted quadruple, but yet he's still here. Either way, he also consults with the government, which can always end poorly, but he does a great job with the Department of Health and Human Services on their technology advisory committee. Yes, there is a technology advisory committee at HHS, which I think is a good thing. He's incredibly passionate about type 1 diabetes, and we really dig into that. I'm not an expert, thankfully. But there's been so much progress, and it's a very interesting opportunity right now for parents of kids and for young adults dealing with this to get what they want when they need on their terms. When you empower the patient with the tools they need, everybody wins. So here he is, Dr. Aaron Ninestein. Aaron Ninestein, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Matt. Appreciate it.
All right. I'm really disappointed in you because I expected more than just three board certifications. Did your mother say, like, three's enough? What's going on?
Yeah. You know, in the academic world, you just kind of rack those things up along the way. Maybe there's time for a few more over the years. But no, I think I have to say I really got lucky in my career. I got into everything to be a physician, trained in internal medicine, along the way fell in love with the field of endocrinology, in particular working with families and people with diabetes. And then as I learned about, I was an American studies major in college, as I learned about informatics and the opportunity to impact healthcare from a delivery perspective, the policy, the systems, the people, the technology, really fell in love with that field and found that there's such synergy between them. And so, you know, while they get divided up by different, it does mean I owe a lot more money every year to boards exams. But the reality is it means that I get to take care of patients at the one-on-one level, individually in clinic, in my office, and at a level of thousands or hundreds of thousands of people at once in the care delivery environment. And now in my role at Notable, millions of patients at once by building software. So I actually am really profoundly lucky to have found my way into the synergy between those different certifications.
So I can't help but notice that there's some background noise. I assume you're filming a movie with De Niro. Is that what's going on?
Absolutely. Well, you know, I'm from Studio City originally, so it's in my blood.
So you got some extras in the background. Of course, what, you have a job?
Yeah, you know, here at Notable headquarters in San Mateo, team's back in the office recently, and just a great energy and camaraderie going on here.
I have a San Mateo story. It involves my trying to learn how to drive when I was 14, but I'll spare the listeners.
Uh-oh.
I'm still here, and no one died, but, you know, that's my memory of San Mateo.
You must have been driving down El Camino.
I also realized that you have to be courteous in California, and I'm from New York, so that didn't really bode well.
Driving on the coasts are definitely different.
Yeah, different rage, very different rage. And then the lava flows don't happen over here, so, you know, All right, I got to ask the question, why endocrinology? It's like one of those things where do you want to wake up and be this one day, or you discovered it through your training?
I think it's because I'm a nerd.
That's a good answer. Go on.
I got very lucky. I did a summer volunteer experience at a sleepaway camp for children with diabetes and teens with diabetes, and fell in love with the field, working with people on a chronic illness that is really challenging their lives and challenging them to perform at their best, live their dreams. And then the science of it is really interesting as well. And I think the combination of the human side, the science side in endocrinology, I just really fell in love with. And jokes aside, it is a pretty nerdy field. So it was a good fit.
I have just a generic question. I've been blessed enough to not have anyone in my family with type 1 diabetes. Is that number increasing over time, or is it kind of level with population growth?
Type 1 diabetes is largely level. There is some increase, but nothing like, I think when people think about diabetes exploding across the population, that really is more type 2 diabetes. So type 1's increasing a bit, but nothing like what we're seeing with type 2.
I've heard the phrase endocrine disruptors every now and then. What are those?
Ooh, I'm sitting here drinking from my plastic water bottle that says it's BPA-free. Think about all of the chemicals that are in environment, fire retardants, plastic containers. How many times have you heated up food in a plastic Tupperware container in the microwave? There's concern that all of those chemicals and microplastics are getting into our bloodstream and interfering with our hormone systems.
So I'm hearing it right. So I'm going to make this up, and I might be right or wrong. There seems to be like three kinds of type 2 diabetes. And there's the congenital type. There's the maybe the food exercise-based one. But can you be doing all the right things, and then the environment just messes you up endocrinologically? There we go.
Well, we'll probably find out someday that there are more than the type 2 diabetes is not one thing. It's probably the downstream symptoms of many different pathways, complex genetics, environment. And I think we're going to learn more over time about the different types of type 2 diabetes that all end up looking the same when people have high blood sugars and come into the clinic, but probably have different underlying mechanisms. And we just don't know enough yet.
Yeah, I have a lot of friends that are type 2, and they are doing everything they can to manage it. And I didn't think we'd be lurching into type 2 because, like, I have tangential relationships, and I see what's going on. One of my best friends has been raising a type 1, and one of my other best friends mm-hmm. is a late-induced type. He's a former mm-hmm. boxing coach with type 2, right? So, mm-hmm. like, it can happen to anyone. I'm fascinated by, like, these Bluetooth things that monitor everything. Is that not like Skynet stuff, but it's really interesting from my perspective.
You mean the continuous glucose monitors you see on people's arms?
Yeah, and the phone tells you to eat something.
Usually that's not it. Usually the phone is just reporting your blood sugar, that the sensor. So there's a little sensor sitting under your skin. People wear the little patch on their arm, a glucose sensor. And it's continuously reading your blood sugar, and then your phone will report what the blood sugar value is.
I just find it fascinating. It's like how far we've come from, again, from a limited vantage. I think that's space age stuff.
It really is. I mean, you know, you asked me earlier about what got me into endocrinology, and I was talking about the sleepaway camp for kids and teens. One of the things we used to do at that camp is walk around every night at 2 a.m. and prick every kid's finger. You'd have to wake them up, poke their finger, draw blood, measure their blood sugar, and then potentially give them a snack if their blood sugar was low. I mean, it was a really, frankly, horrible way for children to grow up and live. And now with these continuous glucose monitors, you don't have to do that anymore. It's reading the blood sugar all day, all night. Parents can check in on the kids without poking their finger. And you know, if anyone's ever done that, it's painful and brutal. So this is a place where there's been just really wonderful progress.
It's amazing. I was watching one of your videos, and I forget which one it was, but you were on stage. You got a kind of like a really good stage presence. Like you're like got not quite Jackie Mason in you, but I could tell like right away, like you're not your normal, like get up there and just PowerPoint yourself to death. You know, do you have any favorite comedians growing up?
always partial to Seinfeld, hoping to have the chance to go see him in a couple of weeks when he's coming through San Francisco. So definitely a Jerry Seinfeld fan. George Carlin was always a favorite on family road trips. I'd say those were probably the top two.
Yeah. I could tell right away by watching your talk, because you made a lot of pop culture references. The thing that struck me the most is that you started talking about how people used to not trust, like, buying things online. I remember, like, when PayPal mm-hmm. and eBay and these things, and then you lurch into, today we're telling the entire planet what's inside our DNA. How far we've come. It's just really interesting. Not many people get on a stage and make those, like, anthropologic corollaries. You're like a closet anthropologist.
Yeah, well, this was, again, sort of a lucky accident, right? I was an American studies major in college. I got to college and found out, like, I could major in basically just learning about lots of different stuff. And who knew that you could do a college major and, wow, you know, this American history class is really interesting, and this English class is really interesting, and this psychology class, so really just broad interests. You know, if you go to my Goodreads, I don't know if anybody still uses
Goodreads.
But I do.
Wait a second.
Yeah, right.
Goodreads. Okay.
Remember that one?
We are old as fuck. Go on.
Yeah, I love Goodreads. But I can't. It's hard to find people on Goodreads. But I'm just interested and curious in a broad spectrum of things, and it turns out that can be useful. I think I spent the early years of my career worried that I wasn't deep enough in one particular subject area. And then it's turned out that being able to converse and make connections across a broad array of things is actually useful.
How pleasant and surprising to be a critical thinking objectivist. Oh, this poor planet. All right, I digress. Fun fact of the day for me, telling my listeners, I read that you're a big skier because you happened to be in Montana in clinic. Is that a true story?
I did. So Matt, it's better than that. I got my last credit in medical school sitting on a chairlift in Big Sky. Worked for a month, work half day, ski half day at the medical clinic of Big Sky. Huge shout out and thank you to Dr. Jeff Daniels, who ran that program for, I think, 20. Actually, he was a New Yorker who moved to Big Sky, Montana, set up a clinic and invited medical students to come for a month at a time for probably 20 or 30 years. What a fantastic experience, and all thanks to Jeff.
So you're coming from the West Coast to Montana, or where were you prior?
Yeah, I was in Los Angeles. I went to medical school at USC.
All right. So what was it like to breathe decent air for the first time?
I have told my wife that someday we will retire in Montana. So it got into my blood, and I'm looking forward to going back someday.
It's like going to Europe and you realize food is food. You go to Montana, oh my, air is air. It's incredible.
Yeah. And as she said, you can retire to Montana.
That's pretty cool. That's pretty, pretty. All right. So you leave Montana. Do you keep skiing?
Absolutely.
Okay, because you can't not ski. I used to ski as a kid, and then it got really expensive. So I'm hoping to ski again one of these days.
Yeah, unfortunately, skiing has gotten that way. And gosh, with climate change, you wonder how much longer skiing will be around for, unfortunately.
We're going to find, like, bare spring mountains with, like, 30,000 snowblowers on them, and that's all we're going to have to cling to.
That's all we're going to have left. Gosh, I hope not.
No, I hope not too. All right, so let's go back to this corollary of people don't trust things in consumer world, and then people started trusting everything in consumer world, and now we're at a place where no one trusted things in healthcare. I was on the original Google Health board of directors, and they were so presumptuous to assume, hey, everyone will just give us all their stuff on Google, and here we are, like, you know, 13 years later, and there is more interest, there's less fear. What are your thoughts on that?
I think it's all about trade-offs. People have to believe that the value that something is providing them is nothing. There's no free lunch, right? It's very easy to say, well, we should do such and such if there's no risks. Everything in life is a balance of, if you walk back through everything you did today, there's some balance of risk and benefit to you, whether that's driving into work, whether that's the food you ate and put in your body, every single thing we do has a risk and a benefit to it. And so I look at technology in the same way, which is what are the risks and what are the benefits? And can we get to a place where the benefits that are that it's providing exceed the risk?
Do you have any specific case studies in your life, in your career, where you've seen someone like flip the switch on, aha, this is more interesting and I can do this now?
I mean, we were talking about reading earlier. I mean, so let's talk about, you know, Kindle, Goodreads, Amazon ecosystem, right? That's collecting a ton of data on us. And yet, how willing are we all to fork that data over because the value it's providing to us is so high? I mean, I'm sharing all the books that I'm reading and all of the products that I'm searching for because I feel like the service is providing a value to me.
All right, let me flip it this way then. So in consumer land, you can choose the things you want based on comparisons and reviews and whatnot. When it comes to your health, oftentimes someone else makes that decision on your behalf, even though you think this is what's best for you or your doctor thinks this is what's best for you. I know I work in oncology pretty much, mm-hmm. which is a different beast than diabetes, but in generally in healthcare, do you find that the patient or the caregiver, are they aware that the decision should be theirs and sometimes isn't?
So I might have a skewed view on this because my career has been in type 1 diabetes, where the entire paradigm is about empowering the person with diabetes with the information, the tools. I'm really a coach. Like, yes, we call it an endocrinologist, but I'm a diabetes coach. And so I think the paradigm there is particular for diabetes. I also think there's a lot of policy happening. People may not be aware of how much effort is happening at the U.S. federal level to try to arm Americans with information about their health, access to their health data, access to their health records. And so I think we're moving in the right direction. It's not all or nothing. It's going to take time. I think the old paradigm in medicine 20, 30 years ago was very paternalistic. And I think things are moving in the right direction of trying to empower patients, put their own information in their hands, and give them the opportunity to make decisions.
All right. I want to ask you a few questions about policy because I saw you work for for HHS, but we got to take a quick break and we'll be right back with Dr. Aaron Ninestein.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
I've had my fair share of opportunities to influence policies and laws and stuff in the Beltway. You are you consult, or I mean, what's it like to work for the government? I know the answer, but tell our listeners, what's it like to work for the government?
Yeah, so I was actually appointed by the USGAO about a year and a half ago to serve on the Federal HITECH Committee. It stands for the Health Information Technology Advisory Committee. It's a federal advisory committee to Health and Human Services and the Office of the National Coordinator. And basically, it's a group of individuals from different backgrounds across the country who are advising the federal government on health information technology. It's an absolute privilege. And we just recently went back to some in-person meetings. We had been virtual. And being a citizen in DC in a federal building, serving on a federal committee, really fills you with a sense of gratitude, with pride, and hearing the stories of the people who are serving and volunteering their time. We went out to dinner the night before the meeting last time, and just incredible people. Reminds you how much of the world is run on goodwill, on volunteers, on people who are passionate about something, trying to make a difference. So for me, it's been incredibly inspirational to see the other people who are serving on the committee.
I mean, it would be nice if we heard good news more often than we do in our society. And that's wonderful.
Yeah, I think this is good news. This really is, you know, government doing what it's supposed to be doing. There are people who are subject matter experts, there are patients who Anna McAllister Slip is a very wonderful patient advocate for many, many years who serves on that committee. And I think this is policy and government working like it should.
Well, someone has to figure out how good news can sell advertising. On a separate conversation. you mentioned before, you know, a lot of people, patients, consumers, they don't know that they have the power to influence policy and change. What are some good examples? I mean, just off the top, I've been circuitously living around the insulin, you know, controversies and the pricing, and that's something mm-hmm. everyone could put their finger on. But anything specific you'd like to point to in the good news world of how patients and providers and maybe the government are doing great things?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, so think about what happened 10 years ago when you tried to get a copy of your medical record. You went to a website, you found an address, maybe you called someone, nobody answered the phone. You drove to the hospital, you found the basement office, you had to go for lunch because they were closed from 12 to 2 and you had to come back when someone came back from lunch. And then they had you fill out a form, you had to write a check for, you know, $350 to get a copy. And then they would give you, you know, 1,000 pages of paper with your medical records. Well, all of the policy efforts over the last few years, you can now just, I'm an iPhone user. Apple Health and Apple Health Records have done an incredible job here of kind of adopting this new policy and standards. You can just download your health record onto your phone and see the notes that your doctors are writing and see your lab results. And I actually tell my patients now when I order lab tests, I tell them, you're going to see the results before I do. And I think this is a remarkable shift in what's possible in healthcare and due to federal policy efforts and advocacy.
So let's talk about that for a second, right? The average Joe didn't go to med school. They're not an academic. Maybe they had some undergraduate or graduate from high school. And you're giving them all this complicated information that they don't know how to process. Talk me through that too. How does that work?
Yeah, again, I there's trade-offs, right? There are definitely situations, and we hear stories all the time of unfortunate situations where people are getting information this way that, you know, maybe they weren't ready for, or maybe it was not the best way for them to receive the information. And so it's not a 100%, this is always good all the time. But what it does do is it opens up the avenue for app developers, for people who are passionate about a particular disease state or helping a community of patients to build an app or build a service that says, hey, you now that you can download your own health information, I'm going to provide you a service to coach you on your Crohn's disease or your cancer or your diabetes. And you as a patient can make the decision about whether you want to use that service to to learn more and to participate in managing your condition. Again, you know, we talked about this before, Matt, like what those services then do with the data. There's a lot of risks there around privacy and data use. But I think it's opening a lot of doors for people to engage with their health information and is a net positive versus all of it being locked up in hospital basements under a stack of paper.
Yeah, I tend to call this better problems to have.
I love that. Better problems to have. Absolutely.
I was just talking to somebody about that this morning, about how we kind of all just used to die in cancer land when there were like five drugs out there.
Yes.
Now there's 50
yes.
billion drugs out there. And it's really hard to be tested based on your genetics. But it's a better problem to have than everyone just kind of dying with four drugs in the market.
Yes. That definitely goes in the category of better problems to have.
So let's talk about AI. I saw this all over the place. I mean, notable, not a sponsor of the show. I was just very curious. Your team
yeah.
came to me and said, would you like to have Aaron on the show? Like, how could I not have you on the show? Let's talk about how we're not going to have a robot apocalypse.
You know, again, I'm going to come back to risks versus benefits. I think about my good friend Atul Butte, who's faculty at UCSF, used the term recently, scalable privilege. I think healthcare today, if you look at across the US, across the planet, is out of reach for most people. Yes, if you are a privileged individual, you can have access to great healthcare. But for most people, it's really out of reach. And so I think AI gives us a set of tools that can bring that level of expertise, knowledge, education, access to more people who don't have it.
I mean, just waiting for the James Bond villain in the hollowed out volcano laboratory to come out with some kind of medicine that's run by AI. And it sounds like Kevin Bacon is selling you on a medication, right? That's going to happen one day.
Yeah. Well, and I think the other thing is people often distill the debate into like, well, is the AI going to replace the doctor? Is, you know, what's better, AI or a doctor? The real answer is the best thing is an AI supported doctor. It's an AI supported nurse. Even from the time when I was in medical school, medical knowledge has expanded so much. It's so vast. And we're still training doctors and nurses to memorize everything and then regurgitate it. Imagine if you could augment their intelligence with AI capabilities and have your doctor there meeting with you, talking with you, giving you recommendations, but you know that the quality is high because they didn't fall asleep during a particular lecture. You know, they skipped out on school one day and they missed that lecture or they fell asleep in class. And now they've got all of the world's knowledge at their fingertips. I would want that doctor.
You know, like, lest we forget that doctors are human beings at the same time of being doctors. My question for you is, there is an inundation of new information all day, every day. How do you keep up with that new information?
I follow Matt on Goodreads.
Wow. I see what you did there. Well done. I'm glad I'm there. You're welcome, Goodreads.
So I am a productivity nerd, Matt. I have, there used to be a website called Life Hacker. I don't know if you ever were on that, but I love trying out new gadgets and tools. And so, these days I'm a fan of a product called a Readwise Reader. It basically allows you to pull in all your email newsletters and blogs and news feeds. So I've picked my favorites. I dump them in there. I sit down on the weekends with my iPad on the couch and I read. And I've given up. I think in the modern era, you have to kind of give up trying to, there's so much out there. You have to give up trying to keep up with it all. You just have to read what you can and then move on.
This goes back to the fact that you still have a life and you have to go home and deal with family and deal with your responsibilities and never hopefully have to call your credit card company because they screwed something up, because that's the worst thing in the world, calling a credit card. So how do you manage that?
You know, as
don't
well
say
as
unless you're a nerd.
as well as everyone else. You know, everyone is doing their best to get by. And it's something I try to always remind myself of when I'm, you know, with people in the workplace or seeing patients is everyone's doing their best to get by, and some people are having good days and some people are having bad days, and we're all doing our best to get by. I look at life the same way. I feel really fortunate to have a great wife and daughter, you know, to have a role, a job, and a company that I work for that I love, to have found a career that I love, to have activities like skiing and reading that I love to do. And so I feel very fortunate.
So let's talk briefly about Tidepool. I love everyone that gets involved in the nonprofit space. I ran one for 13 years.
Yeah.
It's such an interesting privilege to do that. Pros and cons. Like anything else, pros and cons. But Tidepool, which one I thought was called Tide Pod, not a good name, but Tidepool.
Nope, definitely not Tidepool.
Tide, P-O-O-L, Tidepool. Link in the description. Talk about Tidepool.
Yeah, just actually this week, Tidepool had its 10th anniversary. Very, very proud of that and excited about that. Tidepool was a group of parents with kids with type 1 diabetes and a group of endocrinologists at UCSF many years ago, frustrated by how hard it was for people with diabetes to act, you know, believe it or not, access their own medical information. You know, we talked earlier about continuous glucose monitors. People with diabetes had a really hard time getting access to their own information about their own bodies to manage their diabetes, which if they get it wrong, could be fatal in a matter of minutes to hours. And so Tidepool was really born out of that frustration of I have to keep myself alive by managing insulin and blood sugar minute to minute. I deserve access to that data, and I deserve access to a set of tools that will help me manage it. And of course, this being, you know, UCSF and Silicon Valley, we had some really talented tech industry people whose kids unfortunately were diagnosed with type 1, and Tidepool was born.
That's extraordinary. Truly extraordinary. You made a footprint. It's really important.
We great group of people trying to solve real problems that they saw in people's lives. And so much credit, shout out to Howard Look, who was founder and CEO and has poured his soul into Tidepool for more than a decade now.
Wonderful. All right, lightning round. Ozempic, how hard are you banging your head against the wall because of this nonsense that has been co-opted?
Ooh. Frustrating. Has been transformative in treating people with diabetes the last 10 years. Frustrating that it has gotten a little bit out of hand.
Yeah. And now it's a jingle. It's a freaking jingle. They turned it into a jingle on commercials. That's terrible.
They do. Even my daughter knows it now.
I'm not going to dignify it with humming it here. But yeah, everyone listening knows the Ozempic jingle. And I'm just like, it bothers me personally,
but
that this becomes the quick fix no one needs.
I have a different take. I think we as a society are failing people. We see so many people struggling with type 2 diabetes. Our previous treatments really didn't work all that well, and I have seen people's lives transformed with these medications. People lose a lot of weight. Their A1Cs get better. Their lives are transformed for the better. And so I am a believer.
Right. But that's when properly dosed to the right patient. I'm talking about people that are using it off label just so they can get thin.
That is a different story.
Yes, exactly. That is what I'm talking about. I'm not happy that that's happening.
And unfortunately, it's having negative impacts because there's supply chain shortages, pharmacies are running out. And so I have lots of patients who need it, who can't get it.
It's like, yeah, I'm going to take Adriamycin because I have acne. Imagine that.
I do. You know, Matt, I think it is also really important to differentiate between cosmetic use and obesity. Obesity is a medical condition.
Yes.
Treating obesity with semaglutide, which is the compound in Ozempic and Wegovy, is medically indicated, is not something that we should make light of. But yes, I think there is a difference between treating medical obesity and, you know, getting rid of the Hollywood Five.
Yes, exactly. The cosmetic part is just unacceptable to both of us.
Yeah.
All right. Final question. Favorite ski resorts?
Ooh. I've got to go with Big Sky, Montana.
They owe you your degree, so yes.
That's right. They owe me my medical degree. I'm going to stick with Big Sky. I love Big Sky, Montana.
All right. Well, Big Sky, not a sponsor. I'm going to call them. Maybe they'll sponsor because I had you on the show. But I'll let you know what goes on. But I'm thrilled. I'm glad your team reached out. I love what you guys are doing. I'd love to learn more about Notable and share it with our community one of these days. But it's been a privilege and a pleasure to welcome you to the show. Dr. Aaron Ninestein is the chief medical officer at Notable and a closet cultural anthropologist who loves George Carlin and skiing. How's that?
Thank you, Matt. Really appreciate the conversation and the chance to be here.
All righty. Take care of yourself.
Thank you.
Out of Patience with Matthew Zachary is an Off-Script Health production. The executive producers are Matthew Zachary and Andrew McDowell. It's mixed and edited by Kyle Moore. If you like the show, ratings and reviews are always welcome. Leave us a message anytime at 855-AUDIO-66. That's 855-AUDIO-66 to share your healthcare shitness with us, and we might just play them on the air on a future episode. For more information about this show and Off-Script Health, visit offscript.com. That's offscript, no T, .com.